Welcome to Kingdom Quest episode 424, our 2025 season finale. I'm your host, Mike Epps, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
Failed dependency, David McBurney, Family Master.
And apparently I logged in just at the perfect moment.
Holy shit.
The timing. The better.
The timing.
Baker, got you no guitar. Yes. Seriously, I clicked on and I heard, welcome to Q&A Quest. I'm like, oh, hello, welcome to you too. Oh, we're starting, are we?
Okay. Welcome to Q&A Quest, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we decided this is going to be the last one of the year. I'm still going to do streams on Mondays, most likely, and just kind of filling in the spot.
Yeah, I might be on for some of them. I might not.
Yeah, but we're good with formal recordings for the remainder of the year until the shenanigans.
None so.
I need to start putting together a spreadsheet for
the yearly shenanigans.
Yeah, I was just waiting on Prime 4, because I assume, based on what I've played, that's going to be a contender.
You're excellent in the field of being beyond.
Yes. I guess we shouldn't talk about that too much since, well, I guess, you know, it's a Metroidvania and those, although it's not an RPG itself, the category is, okay, fine.
That's not good enough.
No.
But you let me talk about Shadow Labyrinth on the show.
Yeah, because I don't remember what my excuse for that was. I was probably distracted.
Well, in that case, I get to talk about Destiny's new expansion.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because we've ruled on this question.
I don't have the patience for it.
But it's Star Wars themed, and I get a lightsaber.
But it's not even legally Star Wars. I don't care.
It is legally distinct from Star Wars.
It's true.
Illegally Star Wars.
It's funny that it's an official collab, but it's not like a crossover. It's essentially,
it just makes it weirder. I don't understand why anyone involved would do that.
Because it's fun.
No, I just mean it's weird that, like, okay, there's some Star Wars like seasoning. But not ingredients. Yeah. Not full ingredients.
They made the Cabal and sort of Empire. They made a new character who's Destiny Kylo Ren.
I feel like you could have done that without actually doing the Star Wars.
Sure. But then
you'd have to actually pretend that it wasn't really Star Wars instead of pretending not Star Wars.
Okay, that lost me about three pretendings in, so I'm going to move on because I don't want to think about
it. I mean, I just want to say, like, I think this is a cooler collab than just, like, you know, Fortnite. Just let's throw all the properties together. As fun as some of those have
been. Yeah, but I mean, Fortnite is crossover slop.
That's true.
Mission and goal.
It's true. I mean, I think this is a more interesting crossover than what it could have been. I mean, if they just like, oh, here's a black hole and you're in Star Wars universe or something, I think that would have been really, people probably would have enjoyed it, but I think it would have been really stupid.
Like, would have been stupid, but I'm also going to say that, like, it probably would have been the kind of thing Destiny kind of needs right now. But that's more of a business concern.
Yeah, I think long-term doing that would not be good for the game.
It's bad long-term, but the game's already got bad long-term prospects right now.
I mean, that's like any MMO, though, really.
Yeah, the problem is that it's 10 years old and needs something to onboard people.
Yeah.
Yep. But you run the risk of driving off everyone else who's already there.
Didn't stop them the first time.
Yeah, we're stuck.
Nope.
We're stuck.
Never.
Like, some of them have left. Some of them have left, but there's a core of us Like, there is nothing. There's literally no other game on the market that plays like that. Is this?
Despite dozens of attempts.
Yes, despite dozens of attempts, most of which suck ass or are too distinctly different. Like, you know, Warframe is good and it's there, but it's not the same thing even remotely.
Despite like the modal live service video game of the past 10 years being an attempt to contort all sorts of licenses into playing like Destiny.
Yeah. I mean, just like the fact of the matter is, as messed up as the number of times Bungie has messed up over the past 3 years, the one thing they haven't is that core gameplay that no one seems to be able to
play. It shoots good like Halo.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we'll soon find out with that Halo 1 remake, people really can't replicate what they do.
Okay, that's as much Destiny as I can bring myself to think about.
Yeah, that's fine. We can move on. There's other things to talk about. Other Star Wars things to talk about, actually.
Oh, God, yeah, we should discuss that a little bit. But yeah,
even though I could not read the whole article because it was behind a paywall.
Yeah, we'll shout out the article. And yeah, shout out the article at the very least. It's good research. But yeah, the whole, like, mess that occurred when they ported Knights of the Old Republic 2 to the Switch, and then they promised that there would be a version of the restored content mod released as DLC, and then that, like, all fell apart. Like, Stephen Totillo of Gamefile did some investigation into the information about how that all fell apart due to publicly available court documents, because they got sued for false advertising over that one. And so, like, now there's a bunch of... due to the nature of discovery in court cases, there's a whole shit ton of documents in the open that show, honestly, a lot of interesting information. Totillo chose to highlight that they have, like, exact numbers of how many copies the game had sold on a given platform in fairly sense, like, that it had sold like something like 5,561 copies in Chicago as of December 2023.
Wow.
Like, very, very strange. I think that was specifically the Switch version, but yeah. But yeah, it's fascinating. But ultimately, the thing that killed it is ultimately something that shouldn't be too surprising, but obviously they weren't going to ever admit in public, which is they got all ready to release it, and they were running it by Disney Legal, like, hey, this is the, like, we've tried to credit as many people as possible, blah 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 blah, and Disney Legal, like, in the process of being having it explained to them what the fuck a content mod for a PC game is, got very cold feet about whether everyone involved had actually signed off.
Ugh.
Like, did we actually get everyone who touched this? Is there, are we opening ourselves, like, presumably, are we opening ourselves up to being sued if someone, you know, 6 months down the line says, I didn't sign off on my work being in this? And then, yeah, a whole bunch of stuff like that. So ultimately, that seems to be what killed it. They spent essentially years trying to get this smoothed over, and, like, ultimately what we saw after the game came out was that falling apart over the course of a few months. But yeah, it's exactly what you would reasonably expect if you thought about it for more than a few minutes, but it's interesting to get, like, the exact information. Like I said, it's on Gamefile, and you do, there seems to be a free trial. I haven't gotten around to setting one up just so they can read the article, but you know, it seems good, it seems very well researched. Stephen Totillo has been at this kind of thing for a long time, so there's some interesting information there. But yeah, that's why we can't have nice things. It's nearly, like, this is the other reason that, you get these situations where, like, a game, we see this sometimes with, like, questions about, like, why don't they license the fan translation? And the answer is that they're afraid of this. We've seen that happen a few times. A couple of the East games, East 1 and 2 Chronicles, and Oath and Vel'Gana, they, like, the fan translation was purchased. But for a lot of these, it's just, even if only one person worked on it, you run into the issue of, can we prove that? Mm-hmm. We have no idea how this was made. If someone comes in and just says, hey, I helped on that, like, it would be very difficult to demonstrate that. There's just a lot. You open yourself up to a lot when you, like, are licensing someone else's work that isn't, like, a company that has, like, records of what it was doing and when it was doing it. So that's, this is what happened. This is one of the things that can happen. Like, you think you've got everything squared away, and then legal looks at it and is like, no, this won't work. This is too risky. And the entire thing just falls apart at the 11th hour. But yeah, that's a very interesting thing to see floating around. Is there any, like, it's December, there's not really news. I forget when the Keeley ad 3 hours of indescribable pain happens. But, like, that's gonna be the closest thing to news. Okay, that's on the 11th? Oh, Jesus, that's this week. I'm not watching that live. I'll just see what shows up on my social media feed. Wario64 will watch it for me.
I'll be watching it. I'll keep you appraised.
I might end up seeing it because, like, I have a group of friends that I'll occasionally watch it with to just, like, be baffled at it. So, we'll see. This isn't actually news. I just think it's good. Suda51, jumping out in front in response to the horrendous, like, Let It Die Inferno being stuffed to the gills with AI-genned audio, has kindly stepped forward to indicate that Grasshopper's new game, Grasshopper, was not involved with Let It Die Inferno. They were involved with the original Let It Die, then split from the company that owned them, and a new company called Super Trick has made Let It Die content since. But Grasshopper Manufacturer has stepped forward to make it clear that there is no AI-generated content in Romeo is a Dead Man, their new game, and also indicated that they're working on seeing if they can get a Switch 2 version to happen. I hope that does end up.
Yeah, I saw that update.
So that was nice to see. Let's see, but I don't have anything to mention that I've been playing, because it's the same thing I was playing last time. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, it's still good. But I still have not finished it. Gaijin, did you have anything you wanted to bring up?
Game news? Not really.
No, I meant games you've been playing.
Oh, certain someone sent me Pokemon AZ, Legends AZ.
ZA.
And going from rank W to rank F was surprisingly fast.
Huh. It's funny how that happens.
Yep. You were never at risk. So mainly I'm just messing around with that and figure out where things go. And apparently this one wild area has a secret entrance that I can't locate.
Yeah, you'll find some of those. It's a very dense little city.
Yep. Judge and Vale still out there too. unfortunately, the other only other path through to where I'm curious about has a very large red-eyed shark in the middle of it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm leaving him alone for now.
Smart. He's a jerk. Yep. The Vanguard and I are done.
Okay.
I'm currently ignoring part of the main storyline just to try and see more of the city.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
There's some that you can't get to. There are going to be some places you can't get to until you get like a certain story locked ability, but
I'm guessing flight is part of this because there are a few spots where there are very obviously items that I cannot reach.
So. Not quite flight.
But a little more complicated than that, but still. A new movement ability.
Yeah.
Then I suppose without further ado, we can look at the questions Fireminer has so kindly put forward. Let's see. Fireminer bringing up the excellent Shinobi Art of Vengeance. It's a good game, though closer to a Strider reboot or Metroidvania than a Shinobi game. It makes me want to ask this. The old Shinobi games are still fun to play, but if slower, more methodical, and shorter action platformer like it being made nowadays, would it be flashy enough to attract customers? I mean, you could probably sell it, but it certainly, like the follow-up to this being, the funny thing is that Ninja Gaiden Ragebound feels more arcadey than the latest Shinobi, game that started in the arcade. And that did well enough for itself. I think ultimately, Shinobi's kind of been a lot of things, and sometimes that has included not as exploratory as this, but more exploratory games. Like, you can look at, original Shinobi or Shadow Dancer, which both had arcade versions. And those are definitely the most arcadey versions of this. But you can also look at things like Revenge and 3 that had much larger levels that kind of rewarded exploration. You can kind of see where this kind of Shinobi came from. I think this was... This, I think you can absolutely sell this kind, sell a more, arcadey platform.
I mean, Metroidvania by itself came from Castlevania, which was very similar. Not in gameplay necessarily, but in concept of stage-based platforming.
Yeah, and, but the Vania in Metroidvania doesn't really play like those, to be fair.
Yeah.
But... I do think that this there's still an appetite for this. I think this was ultimately more like what Lizard Cube wanted to do with the game, rather than that there was no market for the a more traditional Shinobi. And this has a lot of elements of a lot of different things, but I think it still feels like Shinobi, even if it's like a branch of the Shinobi tree. But, Shinobi and Ragebound are both great. While slow action platformers have fallen out of vogue, I can't help but notice that a lot of modern beat-em-ups still feel pretty close to their 90s ancestors. Mm. Still see modern games like Power Rangers Rita Rewind play around with short combos and short hopping instead of something more combo-heavy like Sengoku 3 or Streets of Rage 4. Yeah, I mean, those are... You run into these kinds of, there's a push-pull of, more combo-heavy games tend to be harder. So something like Rita Rewind or Marvel Cosmic Invasion or, any of the current crop of, tribute games tend to be less combo-intensive or at least less requiring of it. Because that makes them more casual player friendly, which their licenses are designed to attract those casual players.
Yeah. So. Casual accessible.
Yeah. And which isn't to say they're lacking for depth, but it definitely means that they're definitely designed to be played with the very real possibility that you're not great at stringing together combos. Where it feels much more like, say, Streets of Rage 4 is going to just beat your ass if you're bad at doing combos sometimes. It's definitely a choice being made, and you can see some of those lessons from Streets of Rage 4 find their way into Shinobi Art of Vengeance as well. I mean, there is definitely like a smooth motion and combo focus to that game that it expects you to that it wants you to get good at, which may also be part of why they ended up with these much larger levels, was that it encouraged those kinds of comboing through a level by just moving smoothly from point to point. But the my mind are also bringing up the recent Angry Video Game Nerd 8-bit. I wasn't sure what this was. I thought it was just the old games that came out like 10 years ago, but apparently not. They are still making new Angry Video Game Nerd video games in late 2025. Did not realize that.
Okay. Yeah.
Why?
And these ones go backwards. They're 8-bit. They're not even. The other ones kind of had a 16-bit feel, I thought, but I guess the new one is just going full NES hard for the sake of being hard. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently this one's less hard by Fireminer's determination. But what I will say is the cosmic and cruel irony is that the Angry Video Game Nerd as a concept is now older than the games the Angry Video Game Nerd was making fun of when Angry Video Game Nerd debuted.
Yeah.
Those first videos were made in like 04, 05.
Wow.
About games released in like 88, 89. It's been 20 years. Yeah.
So when are we going to get Angry Video Game Nerd stuff about PS2 games? Is that what's going to happen
there? I think that's already happened, buddy.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. You just haven't paid attention in like 15 or so years. Yeah, I don't really keep tabs.
Yeah, he's not. I don't. It's weird. Like, even though his videos are more polished, there aren't as many of them, and I don't think they're as entertaining. And it could just be because I'm sick of the shtick at this point.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
funny for 100 episodes. Yeah,
it's been 20 years. It's okay for people to get sick of this.
Yeah. You know, and no, he seems like a nice guy, and he does. He's also plays in a band, and they do weird kind of 80s covers and stuff. I like James Rolfe, but it's like, man, dude, like, I don't know. The magic isn't there anymore. That's all I can say.
Wheels, I'm gonna hit you with some knowledge. There have been at least 3 straight up PS2 games reviewed by the Angry Video Game Nerd.
Okay, which one?
A shiny nickel if you can guess what any of them is.
It would be funny if, keeping with our previous questions, one of them was the PS2 Shinobi?
Nope. Damn. That's not even a bad game.
I know. It's
one of them,
I know. It's
one of them was Rocky.
I had a copy of that once, and now I can't find it anymore. Okay, bad PS2 game. What's Chaos Wars?
Nope. That's way too obscure, buddy.
Summoner?
You are not doing a great job with finding things that are not obscure.
Wasn't that an early game?
It was a launch game. Who fucking gave a shit about the PS2's launch game?
Okay, me. You need to guess, like, popular bad games.
Evergrace.
What is wrong with you?
I mean, Tales the whole list
is trying to wind me up.
Hey, you're doing better than me, because I don't know any PS2 games outside of, like, you know, God of War, Devil May Cry, you know?
I'm just going to listen.
Oh, there you
Final
go.
Fight
God of War.
Tomb Raider.
Oof.
No. Final Fight Streetwise, Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness, Mega Man X7. There.
Well, there was, in his glitch episode with the glitch gremlin.
Yes, Rocky was in there.
Yeah. And it's like, oh wow, those are some funny glitches. Like, that looks like a terrible game, but I want to play it just to see if I can make it do those things.
Yeah. PS2 Rocky's not that bad.
But it's like, but what? Why? Well, you know what? Because they kept making Rocky movies after all these years. Like, aren't there like 6 of them or 7 of them now? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I remember him and Mike Matei did some, they did a PS1 Batman and Robin game, and it was like, this looks bad. Wow.
The PS1 Batman and Robin game is really fascinating because it sucks fucking shit, but it's also like an early attempt at, like, there's open world elements to it. It's very bad.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating.
Huh. It's not bad for lack of trying. It's just bad for lack of actually being able to do it.
Yeah, this was not a, like, even if they'd had way more money, this was not something the PS1 was really built to do.
Right.
Okay. Fireman saying, does anyone want to talk about the Assassin's Creed Shadows X Attack on Titan collab? Not really. I like Assassin's Creed Shadows, but I don't like Attack on Titan.
I watched sucks ass.
I watched like the first season, and it was like, yeah, there were a couple good episodes, but then it just, I don't know. Yeah, like that first episode to me is very good, and then it kind of goes downhill from there.
Meh. Yeah, yeah. I don't have much. I watched an episode or two when it was new, and I thought I don't need this in my life, and then I was done. Mm-hmm.
But I had a friend who decided to get into to watch Attack on Titan, and she was like, she just needed something to escape from reality, and everyone else who had actually seen it was like, nah, that's not going to happen very soon.
That's not what that's for.
Yeah, if you want to escape the fascist reality, this is the wrong place to be doing it.
Dive deep into fascist anime. Yeah, so like I will take a brief sidebar to say that thanks to Wheels' kind Christmas gift, I have been playing Assassin's Creed Shadows on Switch 2. It's a very impressive port. Ubisoft is good at those.
It's an astounding port.
It does not like, unless you're playing them side by side, you probably won't notice much of the graphical downgrade.
I was shocked. I started it up. It had my save from PS5 already. I didn't even have to manually like connect my Ubisoft account because it was already connected to my Nintendo account. Download my save automatically. And I
think
was the
most insane thing about it. I think the most insane thing about it to me, as someone who hasn't played an Assassin's Creed game in a number of years, is that because they've like jacked everything into this weird Assassin's Creed portal, like you boot it up, it's like, oh yeah, play the actual game you purchased, and then a whole, like, on the Switch 2, it's comical because it's a whole list of other games where it's like, oh, I know what game that is. You can't play those on Switch 2. There's no Switch 2 version of those, but they're in the menu.
Right.
I don't know if they even launched the games on other platforms. I'm going to have to try that. I don't know if it's like a timeline to be like, this is where this game fits.
It's intensely silly one way or the other because it is a thing you can move up and down, and the only one you can select is the game. Like, at least on Switch 2, obviously, only one of those is on there, so that's the only one you can select. But, like, oh, that's Valhalla, that's Mirage, that's, you know, blah, 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 blah.
I think, wasn't there a cloud version of,
I think
the,
like,
Greek one, but only in Japan?
Yeah, Odyssey definitely had a cloud version somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think that came to the U.S. I think it was like weirdly only in Japan or something.
Yeah.
Weird.
I've always wondered if maybe those cloud versions did a little better in Japan.
Maybe.
Like, I have no way of substantiating that other than things like, I think Odyssey cloud version only came out in Japan.
All right, when did Destiny turn into Star Wars?
This most recently. Expansion.
It's like, stay in your lane. Jesus.
No, we will not have to
discuss that. That's the conversation that started.
I know. How dare you go from a lane where you have special people with special powers in place and go into another lane where there's special
can't
people
you just
with special
play
powers
Star Wars
in place?
Outlaws?
You two have to go have this fight later. I'm not sitting through this.
This is like I thought the final expansion,
and I'd never have to hear about this game again.
No, no one ever said it was the final expansion. It was the end of that storyline.
No,
the start of another
one. No, both of you, shut the fuck up. I am not here to be polite right now. I'm telling you.
I didn't start this argument.
I started it, and I'll stop.
Okay, I have successfully determined via asking a wiki that yes, in fact, Assassin's Creed Odyssey Cloud Version seems to have only come out in Japan.
That's why.
I am genuinely very curious as to what the business reasoning was behind that, but it happened. Firemiter does bring up a very funny story that did happen this week.
Yes.
So, Running with Scissors, perennial publishers of just dreadful debasement of the human spirit violence simulator Postal.
Gross.
Announced a new Postal game and then canceled it later that week.
Huh?
Okay.
Because people responding to the initial trailer were like, this looks like AI garbage. And like brought to their attention the studio you partnered with to make this makes AI garbage, and then they just immediately canceled it.
Wow.
Wow.
The people have spoken.
But that was the funniest way that could have gone. But yeah, it's absolutely one of the most surreal things to have ever occurred. Like, video game announced and canceled in same week. I don't even know where to start with that. But yeah, so that's your weekly AI is the stupid future that is about to crater upon itself sometime in the next about 18 months.
Yeah, not the bubble.
Too soon.
The bubble is popping.
Pop, pop.
Can't come too soon.
Pop, pop.
Pop, pop. Who's Magnitude?
Magnitude, your turn to speak. Pop, pop. Leonard. Pop, pop.
R.I.P. Leonard. R.I.P. Leonard Baxter.
Yo, Leonard was awesome.
God, I'm going to briefly...
what's the status on the community movie?
Still awaiting everyone's schedule to line up for production. Completed script.
Okay.
Everyone seems to want to do it, but you know, six or seven people, several of which are quite busy.
Okay.
But, yeah, like. I'm going to briefly mention one of my favorite dumb fucking things they did with Magnitude at the end of season 2 when they're in the paintball game and Magnitude's like talking about being a one-man party and a one-man party can't join a group. That's a paradox. And then they briefly introduce the concept of a character named Paradox. Who is summarily, like, just summarily dismissed, but just bringing up, like, just because they're ready to introduce any absurd character they can think of, Paradox is introduced for that one scene. Let's see. Okay, so Fireminer has asked us a few questions that aren't me just guffawing at whatever the fuck happened with Postal, but... I previously asked about why outside of Mugen and RPG Maker games, and a few other examples, no one had tried to make a great game out of royalty-free assets. Recently, the Japanese font provider Fontworks was acquired by Monotype, who immediately sextupled the yearly fee games using Fontworks fonts have to pay. With the economy going the way it is and so many rent seekers there are right now, do you see more mid to big studios going back to proprietary software and assets? So I will point out that the numbers... on the increase in price for Fontworks are insane and obviously pointless, but basically anything that would be affected by them, it's a drop in the bucket. In terms of, I should say, anything major being affected by them. For indie developers, this is a problem. The numbers were something like $400 a year, or $400 for essentially like an in perpetuity license, in like an unlimited commercial license, like enterprise commercial, which for indie developers, that's a steal. That's incredible. For big companies, that's also a steal, but you know, obviously they're not, you know. You know, obviously they're penny pinching. It's big companies. That number got increased to like $20,000, which is a huge increase, like insane. For any large project, it's still nothing. Like that needs to be understood. That for the larger games, like I saw people talking about, like, will this affect Fate Grand Order? Fate Grand Order has made like $7 billion.
Holy fuck.
This number means nothing. Like, a good week, like Golden Week in like 2023. I was looking this up because I was trying to figure out, like, how much does this actually make in a year? Golden Week in 2023, Fate Grand Order made $15 million.
Holy fuck.
Like, this font price increase for the big phone, like, this is for phone stuff, like, that's what's being most affected here. But for large projects like this, that number means nothing. Which is probably part of why they figured they could make this price increase happen. Because again, like, at the scale they're at, it would still make more sense to license this than to try to create a new font, because new fonts in Japanese are a huge undertaking.
Yeah. I've had, when I was looking for interesting fonts for my own stuff, I've actually had better luck finding certain looks through Japanese font sites, just because searching up anything in English is a, like, hellscape right now. So, but I'll have to say, if you are a small creator just needing something that looks really, like, has a certain look to it, check out a free font called Manaforge, Manaforce, I think it is. It's been around for, like, 18 years now. It is, like, it's one of those products of the old open source movement, basically. So as long as you're not selling the font for itself in, like, a font collection or anything,
you're simply using
the font. It is available for everything you want. So.
Nice. Good advice.
That was a nice find.
Don't say we never did nothing for you.
Yeah. So yeah, there are some really nice fonts dating back to around 2005 to 2008 or so.
See if you can find fonts made by Linux nerds.
Yes.
Nerd.
Nerd. I'm proud of it. You say that with pride.
Yeah.
When we say nerd, we don't mean it as an insult, because we're nerds.
I sometimes mean it as an insult, but not in this case. But yeah, like, this whole business is I could see some studios maybe going for this, but, like, obviously, you know, this question is broader than fonts, but, like, looking at fonts as a specific problem, licensing for larger companies is still going to make sense in this case, because, you know, again, undertaking of making Japanese fonts is very, very time-consuming because of the size of the character set. This takes a specific kind of...
Even going by the most commonly used set, it's still really large.
Yeah, like, it's still, like, an undertaking dozens of times the size of an English font. Beyond that, this is a very specific skill set that requires, like, If you want to make a good one, it is going to take a lot of talent that a development studio simply doesn't have. Like, it's not that it's impossible to get, but also you're getting it to do one thing. Like, honestly, you would probably sooner contract out a firm that was sort of built for this to do this, but that is going to be ludicrously expensive. You would have to use it in many, many projects for it to make its money back. And that's kind of like, if we expand that out to other middleware, like, that's what you run into, is that only the largest companies have the amount of technical staff on hand to make that kind of choice. And a lot of times, like, what we see when developers, when big publishers try to internally create their own technology, what ends up sort of happening is that that technology gets driven by whatever their biggest project is, and then smaller projects have to try to fight the engine to get it to do what to make it function for the game that they're making. Like, you look at the easy example would be Electronic Arts. About 10 years ago, basically everything EA made was moved on to Frostbite. And Frostbite, I want to say DICE made that. That makes the most sense to me.
They did.
Yeah. And Frostbite was designed to power Battlefield, because that's what DICE made.
Yeah.
And so Frostbite did not know, was not built to make sports games or RPGs or action games. And all of those had to acclimate to using Frostbite. And the sports games were big enough that DICE had to help them figure it out. But the smaller, like the further out you got from being a big yearly project, the less help that you could count on from, the less support you could count on. And that's for an engine that's good and functions.
Right.
Whereas if you're looking at something like, we can go further back, we can look at Square's follies with Luminous Studio and Crystal Tools, and we can see the struggle internally from people who had games that had been penciled in as like, these are gonna use Crystal Tools, and then those games slowly migrate away from using Crystal Tools, mm-hmm. because Crystal Tools is not finished and doesn't work. Crystal Tools has two projects that it's essentially built to power: Final Fantasy 13 and Dragon Quest 10. By consequence, it is also used to power the ill-fated first version of FF14. It's kind of bad at all of those. It's best at 13, but ultimately, it just ends up being technology that doesn't end up working for most anyone. Like, the big success story, like, this is the company that made it work the best, is Capcom. They have now had two major internal engines that have successfully powered dozens of games. That's the big success story. You have what seems to be a versatile, well-documented internal technology that can be... that can be used to power a lot of stuff. You don't have any licensing fees, but ultimately you're getting a lot of flexibility because you control the R&D. You can prioritize what engine features need to be made. You can have a very clear understanding internally of how it works, but I don't know the size of Capcom's internal engine development department, but I'm going to be real with you. It's probably huge.
Yeah.
Like,
and I can remember like 20 years ago, people complaining that a lot of Capcom stuff seemed to be really formulaic and like things played the same in certain sense.
Yeah, I think that's probably this. Some of that is probably that. I think more of that is just down to how they function as a business. Yeah.
I mean, part of this was in relation to the Game Boy Color Zelda games. It's because, Capcom was really good at working off a model set by Link's Awakening to make two more games that were very much like Link's Awakening.
The funnier thing about that is that it makes a lot more sense why, certain aspects of those games are the way that they are when you realize that Oracle of Seasons started as a Zelda 1 remake, and that explains a great deal about how its dungeons are arranged.
Oh yeah, that was pretty obvious in parts of Oracle of Ages, or Seasons. Which one?
Yeah, Seasons is the one
Ages
that started
had,
as
Ages
a...
had the more puzzle-based boss battles, and Seasons had the more active ones. I think Seasons was the one that was based on Zelda 1 then.
Yeah, Seasons was the one that started as Zelda 1, which is why, like, the first six bosses are just the first six Zelda 1 bosses. And
much
a lot of
more
the dungeons
interesting.
Are, yeah, and a lot of the dungeons yeah. are modified from the Zelda 1 layouts. But yeah, it's... but yeah, like, MT Framework, RE Engine, those are kind of the big success stories. There's ton, like, those power a number of different games across platforms and genres. But, you know, you're oh, they have several. Yeah, Anvil is kind of their Assassin's Creed engine. Would it surprise you to find out that Outlaws is not on that engine?
Not really.
Well, then Far Cry is on the Duma engine, right? Yeah.
What's that?
I said Far Cry's on the Duma engine.
No, I was asking what Wheels had asked.
Okay. I was going to say, what engine is Outlaws on?
It's on Snowdrop, which is another Ubisoft internal engine.
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
The Division.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because it was Massive that made it, so...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
Anvil, Ubisoft has a bunch of internal technologies. I would imagine there are... essentially, like, technology development group is also huge.
Well, it's funny because I, for some reason, I thought it was called Far Cry because it was the Cry engine, and that's not true. I think it was derived from it, but yeah.
Far Cry 1 was developed by Crytek.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
What I was going to say before was just... with regards to Frostbite, it's like, yeah, the PC version of Dragon Age Inquisition is poorly optimized garbage, and even on my newest computer, it still just doesn't quite look or run as well as I would hope it would. Although on the Series X, you can run that game at a higher frame rate at 60, which is good. Sure. And then I was also just going to say the RE engine, I think, is awesome because it was used for, I want to say, 7 and 8... And also Street Fighter 6.
7, 8, SF6, DMC5. Like, all of their big next-gen games have been RE Engine.
To me, it appears to be a good engine, and those games, like the PC versions, you don't need, like, an insanely good computer to run them either. Which is good. I think they're well-optimized for consoles and for low-end hardware. But then they scale well, too. Like, if I play Resident Evil 2 Remake on PC right now, it looks amazing to me. And I can max it out, and I can go over the VRAM threshold, and it doesn't run like shit. It's like, wow. You can go over 12 gigs of VRAM, and it still runs fine running off of DDR4. It's like, holy shit. I love it.
FireMiner's asking something that only you would you would have context for, Gaijin.
Yes.
Are there any non-children's games that don't have a single letter of kanji?
Shin Megami Tensei.
The first?
No, the Super Nintendo one.
Yeah, that's what I
yes,
mean.
Also the
Megami,
first two.
Like the first Shin Megami.
Yeah, also the first ones, yeah. If they have any kanji, then it is a very small amount. It's one of the things that you kind of lose when you have to make do with very little memory space and a whole lot of text.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I remember having a hard time playing Shin Megami Tensei at first. It may not be 100% kanji free, but it is very, very,
very
much mostly kana. But yeah, if you're that kind of question, you're going to have to go with either something on the Famicom, Super Famicom, Famicom Disk System, or something similar where they had just such
based.
A premium on space, they couldn't spare much. I would say
and
Game Boy as well, except most of the Game Boy games would definitely not be counted as adult for adults. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's the same reason why Pokemon didn't have any kanji in it, except for maybe the word for money or for coins.
Yeah, I think there's just until... I think the only one was the yen symbol.
Yes, the yen symbol, and technically also red, blue, green, yellow, gold, or silver in the title page.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where it wasn't really a character set, it was a graphic asset.
Yeah. Oh, they might have had it in the game as well, just because of that, but I can't remember that much. But yeah, it wasn't until Black, White, that you actually had an option to turn kanji on.
I like that it was still optional.
And I remember writing the impression for that game and making a note of, this is actually a big deal, guys.
It is hard to describe, but this is very strange.
This is a good thing. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, as Shin Megami Tensei, not only was pretty much all text in kanji, or not kanji, hiragana, all foreigners in the game spoke only katakana.
Of course.
Wow.
Which is a lot more difficult to read than you would imagine.
Fireminder also asked conversely if you've ever played anything that had seen anything that is kanji intensive enough that you would not recommend it to someone who was not at least like passing high school proficiency.
Well, I mean, obviously any visual novel in Japanese, but for RPGs, Taisho Mononoke Ibun Roku for PlayStation 2.
I don't want to go. Mm-hmm.
It's because it's set in Taisho period. It's like the same time period as Demon Slayer. And there are a lot of very random items that are actually technically equipment for abilities that are completely named in kanji. The money system is based on traditional Japanese, which means there are two different denominations with two different kanji. Quite a few things. It's a highly, highly kanji intensive game.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, there are others where you might see, like, I remember this one odd little PlayStation game that had yes and no in kanji, which is almost unheard of. It was still very obvious.
Yeah, you don't see those.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen kanji being used in just really odd situations, but just this one game from Gust was very ludicrously high. I mean, even compared to stuff like, I learned several high school level kanji off of Persona 3, for example. And that's still not comparable to Taisho Mononoke Ibun Roku for amount of symbols involved. So, yeah. Or just, type, number, type, and combinations. It just gets really weird. Very fast. Yeah, I'm sure there's others, but that's just the first one that immediately comes to mind, just because I still have it on the shelf in the back room. And eventually, I am going to beat it. Eventually.
I believe in you.
Yes. It also doesn't help that it is, its approach to plot development has more in common with Saga Frontier than anything else that Gust has made. So, or at least more common with Saga, is you have five different protagonists with five different plot lines. And, it's a real oddity for Gust and a lot of fun, and you can kind of tell where it sits on the evolution of Artanelico's battle system. It was a precursor to that one. Mm-hmm. Just a very different game. Okay. Anything else?
Let's see. The theme song of Howl's Moving Castle has become the anthem for TikTok and YouTube shorts about Japanese food, all because of the one scene in the movie. Has any video game soundtrack proliferated in this way? Gaijin's already talked about that time he heard someone playing the DQ theme in a restaurant.
Oh, no, it wasn't a restaurant, or not just in a restaurant. It was a string quartet playing it for a charity event on a in on a made for TV movie and from a major series.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so it was a situation where in an American movie you would probably be hearing something by Mozart or Chopin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unequivocally the overture to Dragon Quest.
But yeah, any other things you can think of?
Seems the Imperium uses bat-grown soldiers based on Kallus' Shadow Legion. I mean, that's the big one right there. No, because outside of stuff that's specifically related to the game series, not really. That's the Dragon Quest Overture is like the most recognizable piece of game music in the country, apart from anything that Nintendo owns and is not willing to use in this manner. So, yeah. Or something that was like commissioned for a movie or for a game, like Eyes on Me or Eyes on You.
The FF8 one, at least in English.
Yeah, I've heard that one in the wild before. Eyes on You, Memories of Life. One of the songs that was commissioned or at least used heavily with Kingdom Hearts.
Simple and Clean, probably.
Yeah. So yeah, those all charted, and they got a lot of play on the radio for a while.
Hmm. They were reasonably popular pop songs.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was the fact that they were commissioned pop songs.
Yeah. So. Square seems to have had a particular fondness for doing this.
Yep.
Previously asked about gamers who would praise a good game even though it bankrupted the studio, but how often does that happen with other mediums? Like, Ultraman is arguably going through a high period, yet there are still people complaining about the diorama not being as good or cinematic as they were in the 90s. Don't know that Super Aya spent so much on those 90s dioramas that they suffered chronic losses and were nearly bankrupted. I mean, yeah, like, it's easier to, like, When you see something that clearly was so important to the people making it that they essentially obliterated their own livelihood doing it, it becomes easy to lionize it.
Yep. You know, I still think it's funny that tokusatsu is the topic here, because that's a genre that was founded on, we don't have enough money to do what we really want to do with this, but we're going to try our best anyway.
Yeah, and developed its own set of genre convention shorthands.
I mean, like the original Godzilla, what Toho wanted to do was a Japanese remake of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, mm-hmm. which is a Ray Harryhausen claymation-based movie.
Yeah.
And they looked into it and realized that they could not afford to do this. Which is how you end up with rubber suit monsters knocking down dioramas of Tokyo.
There was, in Monsters, Inc., they go to a nice fancy restaurant called Harryhausen's.
Yep, yeah. I remember that. Like, yeah.
It's funny. Now I understand why it's funny. Okay.
Now you know the rest of the story.
Knowing is half the battle.
It is.
Of course, Harryhausen developed a lot of his techniques because he really, really liked King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a DVD with an interview, but actually, it was not really an interview. It was just more like him and Ray Bradbury just shooting the breeze about their college years. Because they were roommates in college.
Wow.
And they talked about going to see a one-night showing of King Kong in a movie theater 2 hours drive away from their college.
Yep. Gotta want it.
Yes, Godzilla owes its existence on a direct lineage from King Kong.
Why they then fought.
Yeah.
But, yes.
Wait, who won? I don't remember.
King Kong in all versions.
King Kong always wins.
King Kong in all versions.
Okay.
It's the original Godzilla version.
King Kong, they had multiple endings and they just changed it up depending on where they were showing the movie.
No. It's the only change to the ending was that you could hear Godzilla roaring in the Japanese version. King Kong wins in all of them because this is before Godzilla's face turn. But yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah. You ever hear about the early the lost Japanese King Kong film?
I may have heard about it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, like 30s, unsurprising that it's lost now. King Kong appears in Edo. That existed at one point, as far as I'm aware. No, like last I looked into it, like it is believed to be just lost for good for likely World War II reasons.
They weren't really saving stuff much either.
I mean, they weren't saving things, but like also just like it's likely that it was destroyed. Let's see. There were 5 reels in length. I forget how long a reel typically is. I'm actually curious about this now. A reel is usually about 10 to 11 minutes, so, and this was split into 2 parts, both of which were 5 reels, so it's about an 110 minute film about King Kong fucking up 1938 Tokyo, or Edo as the case may be. That's the same place.
Edo would have been 1838 Tokyo.
Yeah, made in 1938, but yeah, likely a period piece even at the time.
I mean, they were making enough samurai movies even from the start.
Yeah, like they probably had sets left, like whatever. to trail back to the original question, I think it's very easy to lionize something that someone believed in so hard it destroyed their livelihood. But I think there's something to be said for, like, if we want to keep making the things we care about, we do have to occasionally decide that it is not worth destroying our studio to make this. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to decide what cuts to make in order to make sure we can keep making things. But let's see. To hit another one, I've alluded to the problem of Legos getting more expensive for less, less in a previous question. There's a sentiment among Lego fans right now that because Legos are getting too expensive for, I apologize, I'm American, we tend to say Legos, even though I am aware that everywhere else it's, Lego is the plural. I apologize. I'm going to do that reflexively by accident.
Lego brick.
Are they getting more expensive in Europe? Because I have not noticed any price difference in years.
I would suspect that it depends on what sets you're looking at as well.
Get a kid-friendly sets.
Yeah, the Nintendo sets seem to be awfully expensive.
They're not. Like the starter ones are, but then after that they're pretty cheap. Minecraft sets are very cheap.
One Piece sets are not cheap.
I don't know. Minecraft Legos seems... It's logical, but also redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, but kids still love it. Those sets sell.
Yeah. All
right. Also made for a really good ending to the Lego versus Minecraft rap battle video.
But... Yeah, to finish the question, this is the sentiment among LEGO fans right now, that because LEGOs are getting too expensive for kids and parents, just would rather buy cheaper third-party building blocks. A lot of children's only exposure to LEGO as a brand is either through LEGO games or Fortnite. Seemingly a bad thing for the brand in the long term, but I just have got to ask if LEGO games themselves are able to encourage kids to play with actual LEGOs, or are they satisfied with just playing the games? I think it definitely engenders like a fondness for the concept, but also most of the LEGO games that I've seen have very limited amounts of like actual construction in them. I think the actual thing competing with children playing with LEGOs is Minecraft and games of its ilk. Yep.
Like Roblox.
You don't build in Roblox
in general.
Oh, you don't? No. Well, then what is even the point? I don't understand.
Imagine a platform with the worst possible approximation of all your favorite games.
There are children making it is a creativity suite, though. There are children making those.
Yes, I just mean it's... I don't want anyone to confuse it with Minecraft, because it's very different.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just broadly saying, like, that they are competing in the sense that, like, the underlying appeal of LEGO is to allow you to create something that you thought of. And in that sense, creation suites as a whole are competitors.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's the actual thing that they have to deal with, and that's part of why they seem pretty keen on keeping Minecraft Legos around.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think, like, it's anything like that is going to make kids play with Legos. Just Legos being what they are is gonna do that, and I don't think they're hurting too much.
I do think that it is
important. Having visited Legolands multiple times in recent years, like, it's huge.
I do think it is important to keep them accessible to lower income bands if they want to keep the brand healthy.
I think the Minecraft Legos, which are pretty cheap. Like, a lot of the smaller sets are not expensive. I think a lot of what people get a lot when people say Legos are too expensive, what they're thinking of a lot is like the big sets. Like, oh, here's a giant.
They're bleeding the collector sets.
Yeah, they're either looking at the giant collector sets, which is like ridiculous, or just, you know, like some of the bigger sets for kids. Like, oh, here's a giant like spaceship from Star Wars or something like that. Yeah, those can be run pretty expensive.
Those were expensive when I was a kid.
Yeah,
the rich kids had those.
Exactly, but
right.
I mean,
those are rich kid Legos.
As someone who's had to buy Legos for kids for years now, like, I have not noticed any change in the price of the smaller sets, which are great. You get tons of pieces. You get lots of characters. There's especially the Minecraft Legos. Like, there's one set they sell that's like not a specific, like, this builds this, you know.
It's not a specific scheme that you're building.
Yeah, it's just like here's a bunch of blocks and here's some ideas on what to build. And I think that one was only like $40 or less, and it's a ton of pieces. Like, yeah. There are definitely lots of very expensive sets, and there are lots of stupid, really stupid collector stuff. And yes, the $130 Going Merry from One Piece is constantly taunting me whenever I go in the store.
Jeez.
But for the but I mean, even like those, like the smaller One Piece sets, there's one that's under $30 with several
characters. I do remember
a nice little building. Like, there is a ton you can get, and honestly, you want to talk about those like knockoff blocks, they all suck ass and fall apart very easily.
Yeah. Mega blocks.
There's a reason why they haven't replaced Lego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember, like, growing up, because we often had difficulty affording name brand stuff. We did have like a giant like bin of like 1,000 like just assorted bricks from Mega Blocks, and those survived well enough. Yeah, those are still around.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've had...
Yeah, like, this is... What I'm getting at is this is a phenomenon that has existed for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, I mean, I got most of the Lego sets I wanted. I especially liked the Aquanauts. But then I remember one year, there was this really cool, like, Lego vehicle, and it might have been Lego Mindstorm or something, and it was the one where it had a computer and you could program it to drive itself, and I wanted that, and my mom actually said, like, oh, those are, like, $200. You can't have that. I'm like, oh, okay. So, yeah.
There's so many cool Legos now that I'm really pissed I didn't have, like a kid. Like, when I was, like, just at the edge of not playing with toys anymore, I was desperate for, like, Sonic the Hedgehog. Okay. I was, like, desperate for Sonic the Hedgehog toys, and they just didn't exist. And now they're everywhere, and they have Legos, too. Like, come the fuck on. It's not fair. It's not fair, damn it.
I loved those Sonic 3 McDonald's toys. They were awesome. And there were no other Sonic toys at the time, I tell you.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, if anyone's listening and thinks Legos are overpriced, I would encourage you to look at the smaller sets, because they are not. And I bought some for the kids this holiday season for Christmas. And they were all under $30.
Wow.
So they do exist. But yeah, I have also seen absurdly expensive ones. Like, you could buy, going the high-end One Piece one is the floating restaurant for like $300.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are not for children.
No.
As far as like the Lego games though, like I think they tried it with one game, Lego Worlds or something, where it was actually a Minecraft-type game. And you have Lego Fortnite. But, you know, kids just like playing with those characters, like the Lego-style characters. And I don't think they need to focus as much as on the quote-unquote building aspect of Legos in the Lego video games. Just make a cool game with Lego characters, like what that new Batman game looks like, or Lego Horizon Adventures.
Lego Horizon Adventures is great because it's not like the other Lego games at all. It's just a normal game that happens to look like Legos. And I had fun with it.
Yeah, no, it's great.
And it's a PlayStation Plus title for December, the Essential tier, which are the ones where you add it and it stays on your account forever. Yeah. It's like, wow. So now I finally caved and bought it for $20, but like it's worth $20 and now I can just, you know, play it without putting the disc in and just keep the disc and it's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's the best Horizon sequel.
Oh, and let's just say I happen to know there are two little girls who might be getting a Switch 2 for Christmas, so I have to decide which additional game they might want. Probably Donkey Kong. Yeah.
Oh, banana.
I think they're getting the Mario Kart bundle. So then it's like, okay, then I could just get him Donkey Kong. And they have Pokemon Shield. They have Pokemon Legends Arceus. They have Let's Go Eevee. I don't know that they're really playing Pokemon anymore, so I don't know that ZA Legends would be a good idea. Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, you can't go wrong with Donkey Kong, though.
You really can't. And they played it here and they loved it.
There you go.
I had them start a new game and they kept demanding, where's Pauline? When does Pauline show up? Is that rock Pauline? I said, shut it!
Just quiet. Spoilers.
Play the damn game.
It's very obvious, and they were... but no, quiet, spoilers.
Quiet, ew. Just play the damn game.
Noted RPG of the Year candidate, Donkey Kong Bonanza.
It is RPG adjacent. It is fine.
It's
great.
More of an RPG than Final Fantasy 16.
It really is. No, I don't. I do not argue that. Did you guys talk about Metroid already?
It's not an RPG. Mm-hmm. I was denied from talking about it.
What?
Yeah, but Dave's not here, so we gotta go. Quick, go, go, go.
It's RPG-ish enough. God damn it.
I got outvoted. What?
Oh, yeah, because I jumped on late. Oh, would I have been the tiebreaker?
We didn't actually have a vote.
Okay.
I didn't okay. fight. I didn't fight back that much.
I'm
too lazy for that.
Well, if I can just talk about what I've been playing, which is...
Go ahead.
Okay, so I have been playing Metroid Prime 4 because mm-hmm. that fits into the category of what have you been playing? And I've played like 2 hours of it, and it's absolutely amazing so far. The graphics, the music, the art direction. I think Miles McKenzie is awesome. I think he is a perfect character foil for Samus. She never talks. He never shuts up. I think it's great.
The funny thing is, he shuts up as soon as you leave the area.
Yeah. Well, I'm still in the forge area where there's interference from all the lightning, so you can't talk to him anyways.
Yeah, it doesn't change after that. He's just there to help on occasion.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Like a hint system. Yeah. That's fine. So... And then, of course, we were playing Marvel Cosmic Invasion, which is an RPG, actually, because you got to level up all your Marvel people, and they get more health as they level up and whatnot. So we were playing that last night, had quite a bit of fun with it.
It's very good. Glad I finally unlocked Phoenix.
Yeah, and so yeah, so the obvious comparisons are Scott Pilgrim, the game, Streets of Rage 4, Shredder's Revenge. But it's easier than those games. The levels are a little bit shorter and less interesting, in my opinion, but the boss fights are easier, so, you know, you're not... It's not like you're breezing through the level and then getting a game over against the boss. That happened to me in Shredder's Revenge a bunch of times. And the Scott Pilgrim game was absurdly difficult on the lowest difficulty, but that went all in on the RPG elements and buying gear and stuff. Streets of Rage 4 had no RPG elements and didn't have that many characters, although they were distinctly different. So what I like so far about this Marvel...
Also like a million characters that you have to unlock.
Yeah. And so what I like about Cosmic Invasion is you've got so many characters to choose from to start with. You get to pick two that you can switch between for longer combos. And it is the X-Men beat 'em up arcade game that I would have loved to play as a kid, and I still love to play as an adult. And I remember playing the original X-Men arcade game at Chuck E. Cheese. And, of course, nobody knew who Dazzler was, but it was okay. And I didn't know who half the bosses were. But this, to me, is just better. You know? Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. that Konami X-Men game is officially based off of the pilot that was not picked up, Pride of the X-Men.
Oh, God.
Okay.
It was a... Yeah, it's a pilot, and hey, there's Red Wolverine and Dazzler for some reason.
That's right, Wolverine had the brown and yellow instead of the blue. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that was a cool game. So, and in case you didn't know, Chuck E. Cheese was this place, and Chuck E.
he's entertainment cheese.
Listen, the children know what it is via.
Also, there is absolutely no one.
I was gonna say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's a rat who gives you pizza. Yeah, why would you accept pizza from a rat? He was the original pizza rat. He was awesome. And his pizza wasn't very good, but it was pizza. You were a kid. You didn't care. You got tokens to play the cool arcade games and skee ball, and there was a ball pit, and it was amazing. It was magical.
That's why I was obsessed with Pizza Hut as a kid. It's my favorite pizza.
You ever hear about how they tried to keep Chuck E. Cheese alive during the pandemic?
No.
They were. Tell me. I remember this because I actually did it near my house. But it was when the rise of like order out stuff started, order out apps started happening. Chuck E. Cheese started registering as different restaurants that all provided this, pizza from the same source, basically.
Yeah, Pasquale's Pizza was the like biggest of those names, but they would like they listed as different restaurants in order to because no human being was going to order Chuck E. Cheese pizza on its own.
That's true. Yeah.
That seems to have finally died as of this year.
Poor Chucky.
No, Charles Entertainment Cheese is still there. Pasquale's has died.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, yeah, okay.
My kid got crap? Invited to a Chuck E. Cheese's birthday party not that long ago. When did they die?
Okay, so a couple more of these questions before we pack it in for the evening. I've asked more than enough about the attitude of certain people towards Expedition 33. Still, how often does something like that happen to another genre or medium? For example, for some people, the history of magical girl anime starts with Sailor Moon and ends at Madoka Magica. This is just what happens when like something picks up outside of a subculture, and then it's like this must be the best or the most innovative version of this, and it's like no, it's probably just a good version that happened to hit at the right time.
Yeah, that's Expedition 33 for sure.
It's a good game that hit at the right time.
It's a very good game, very pretty game. I think it stands out a little more because of very good voice acting and very good like art direction.
How frank it is?
Yes.
Yeah, it turns out Charlie Cox is actually a very humble guy, which was nice to hear.
Seems like it. Yeah.
Charlie Cox is cool.
Yeah.
And I'm glad.
I heard something like as when he... Hold on. I don't remember exactly what I read, but it was something to the effect of like when he's given praise for being in this game, he just is like, well, what about my coworkers? You know? Something to that effect. Many
people did great work here.
Yeah. He was very humble. He didn't try to take credit for the entire game.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as a glory hound. But
I'm glad he gets to play Daredevil again, because he is the best Daredevil. Oh,
man, that's going to be wild, isn't it? The season two of Born Again.
Oh, season two of Born Again. That's what you mean.
Yeah. Season one was just like, holy shit. Like, Disney ain't fucking around. This is R-rated.
Was very sure they were not going to fuck around, but then they did, so.
then they did not, is what you're getting at.
I don't know. You know what I mean.
Yeah. Yes.
They did hold no punches.
You got
no
deep into double negative territory there.
Don't do what Donnie Don't does.
I don't know what not you're talking about.
Okay, Fireman is saying 90% of the time a manga or anime want to do a parody episode about cars or racing sports or both. We'll do an initial deed parody. Is there any game like that where it belongs to a relatively niche genre but has so much cultural cachet that when anyone wants to make a reference or parody the subculture, they will inevitably reach that game? It's Dragon Quest.
Yes, Dragon Quest. Massively.
Like
across multiple media.
Yeah, like Japanese RPGs are reasonably popular within games, but like when someone is casting about for what a game is outside of games, that's the game, like especially in Japan, that's the game they make.
So granted, if we're talking about manga and anime, Wizardry is actually hit a bit more often than Dragon Quest.
To be fair, Dragon Quest was also influenced by Wizardry, so that's fitting.
It's true. It's Wizardry, but not terrible.
Yeah. No, I mean, Wizardry became its own subgenre in Japanese video gaming, so... Yeah. Good example here. Delicious in Dungeon. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very, very obviously Dungeon Core Wizardry clone-based.
I remain Like, I need to briefly talk about one of the funniest stories I've ever heard again. Yes. Robert Woodhead, one of the co-creators of Wizardry, later went on to found an anime licensing company called Animego. And yep. Animego apparently had a great, found it much easier to get hold of licenses at the time because there was a certain degree of cachet of like, ah, yes, the co-creator of Wizardry would like to license your anime.
Wow.
From the way I heard it, he wasn't even aware that Wizardry was that popular still in Japan when he went over to try and negotiate some licenses. And
yeah,
the people he was talking to were like, it's you!
Wow.
So, I mean I don't remember which series, but he basically licensed multiple series for literal pennies on the dollar just based on his name.
Of course we're going to let you can do whatever you want. You made Wizardry.
Yeah.
Wow. I
mean, oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, from what I have heard, it wasn't his intent to do that when he went to go get some licenses.
Just what
it just
happens.
Turned out really, really well for
it. Mrs. Fargo, yeah. Konnichiwa.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's definitely the thing I would think of is, like, those old school RPGs, they've, especially now, they've become relatively niche, but there are, between Wizardry and Dragon Quest, those two things are just immediately, especially in Japan, what is called to mind.
Yes.
Let's see. 90% of time, manga or anime, okay, yeah, let's see, something that informs a lot of people, the only thing they know about a genre or subculture. But yeah, there are some other examples of this, but I can't think of anything that's as ubiquitous as those. MF Ghost, the sequel to Initial D, interestingly makes people realize that strip away all the Eurobeat and such, Initial D itself is a pretty dull story with dull characters. How many sequels have managed to make people realize that the originals weren't that good in the first place?
Horizon, Forbidden West.
Oh god.
No.
Wheels, that only counts if you don't like Horizon 1 that much anymore.
I don't. I don't think I can go back to it.
But yeah, I think if you ever see someone talking about how something is influential but has aged badly, this is the phenomenon they're talking about. But it also varies from person to person. Like, to me, essentially, any follow-up to Zelda 1 just reminds me how much I never want to play Zelda 1 again, even though it's very important and good. Like, there's a lot of that. Like, I would honestly say, even if people don't realize it in these terms, Castlevania Symphony of the Night did this to Castlevania 2.
Yeah.
It takes some of the ideas for progression there, and it turns them into so much more palatable and like broadly interesting to the broader audience that it, in retrospect, people were ready to believe the argument that, oh, Castlevania 2 was terrible and always bad.
I
think Castlevania 2 was originally made for the Famicom Disk System. It just didn't have everything it needed to make itself what it wanted to be.
Yeah,
yeah, no, I think.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying that, like, the idea that the game was terrible is kind of revisionist because it comes from people playing later games that had. And it loses some of its novelty value because, like, later games like Symphony of the Night do draw things from it. But they're so much more successful that the response when going back to 2 is like, holy shit, why does this play like this?
Mm-hmm. This was originally made for a system where you had to swap discs.
Yeah.
Please turn disc over.
I thought Castlevania 3... made 2 look like shit. I played 3 and then played 2 and was like, oh, no. No.
I was never that enamored first with 2, but 3 was the jam.
Yeah, 3 was great.
Like, it was never the most popular of the three. It was always the least popular of the three. But the idea that it's terrible, I think, is in part to do with future games.
No, I could definitely see that. Because, I mean, it does, I think, it has, like, this reputation as being this really cool game. That persisted for a long time.
It was cool in the original, it just wasn't all that good.
Yeah. I think that's true for a lot of NES games. Like, I don't think I could ever play the original version of Metroid.
It's really hard. You have to be in the right mindset. I'll look at, like, I don't have evidence of this, but I'm going to, like, spitball and say that Dragon Quest III really took the bloom off the rose for Dragon Quest II.
Yeah.
I would imagine that it was well regarded at the time. It was probably considered too hard, but, like, once you see 3, like, the expanded scope of 2 feels like nothing compared to 3.
Oh, I would also say that, like, I think Mega Man 2 is just so much better than 1 in so many ways.
It is.
And
yeah.
And then I thought 3 was bad, and then 4, either 4 or 5 I really like. So I like the easier Mega Man games. So to me, it's like, yeah, the first game is very hard to play after playing 2 and 8 and X1 and, yeah.
Man, what an odd number. But yeah, yeah, I think... I'm just saying, like, usually when people are calling out the best in the series, 8 is not usually in the first handful they think of.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's nostalgia reasons for that, because I remember playing it as a kid.
I honestly like 8. I just think that, like, it's just unusual to hear.
You know what it is? When I was doing Mega Man March, like, 2 years ago, and playing Mega Man 8 again, and thinking, oh, I love this game. It's like, oh, no, I only ever played the first half of it. And... then I got to, like, one of the late game stages where you're on, like, the board again and you got to hit the inputs to jump and duck, and it's like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, this is awful. So yeah. There was a point where I revisited it as an adult and I'm like, oh yeah, huh, this is gets very hard in the late stages. Yeah. I mean, what I can say about Metroid is, as a kid, I had no idea what the fuck was going on in that game, what I was supposed to do. Other people showed me how to get, like, the long beam and the ball bomb and stuff. And I remember briefly playing Metroid 2 and thinking, oh, this is just garbage. This is worse. Okay, no, I don't want to play this. I briefly played Super Metroid and was like, oh, this looks like a really cool game, but again, I still don't really know what I'm doing. Like, I watched my cousin beat the final boss, and it was like, oh, this looks cool. And so, yeah. And then I can just say that with Metroid Prime, it's like, oh, first-person shooter, how is that going to work? And then I played it, and I'm like, oh, no, this works. This is great. This is cutting-edge graphics, this is an adventure game first, a shooter second, and it's got puzzles and platforming. And I liked Doom and Wolfenstein at the time, and it's like, oh yeah, I thought Prime was good, I thought Prime 2 was good. And then Prime 3 I did not like, I barely played it because it felt like a tech demo for motion controls, and they looked for any excuse they could to make me flail my arms around. I really did not care for that, and to me 4 is just... the Metroid game I've been waiting 20 years to play. So just want to throw that in there.
Okay, so another of these that I would... something I would bring up, a related thing, is that sometimes, like, another, like, franchise will come around and just annihilate its competition in this fashion. Mm-hmm. And the thing I'm thinking right now is Resident Evil just turning... Alone in the Dark into a scorch mark on the ground. Like, there's, like, Alone in the Dark is very innovative, very interesting in historical context. People will recommend you play Resident Evil 1. They will never recommend you play Alone in the Dark without the caveat of you're doing it for historical reasons.
And you know what? I would say, like, Resident Evil 2... does not make 1 obsolete. I think they both have something special to offer.
They have different strengths.
Exactly. And I I recently tried to play 3 again, and I'm like, no, I don't like this. I don't like Nemesis. No.
3 is very much a game that was essentially made out of spare parts to get another game out because the game sold like gangbusters.
That's what it seemed like. And then I played 4 on the GameCube when it came out, and it's like, this is amazing. And somebody showed me the PS2 version years later, and I'm like, oh, good God, this is awful. Like, wow, GameCube version is so much better. Holy crap. Yeah.
But yeah, so that would be another thing I would say that's like a related phenomenon. Like, Resident Evil became so much the horror game that, like, the following Alone in the Dark turned into a Resident Evil clone, which shouldn't have even been possible.
And for the record, I've yet to play a Silent Hill game that I liked. I just, I'll play it for an hour or two, and then it's just like, this is too hard, and don't care for it. Sorry.
I need to play Silent Hill 1 and 2 are actually exceptionally easy, if you know what you're doing. But
okay.
I do think that, like, for good and ill, Silent Hill 2 to 1 kind of did this, where, like, 2 was considered, like, in historical retrospect, and I definitely know Silent Hill 1 fans, and, like, this is not a completely outmoded concept, but in the general perception, 2 kind of, like, completely ate 1's lunch in terms of being something people care about. But, yeah, let's see.
And I think the ultimate case of a sequel overshadowing, like, the original is, of course, Street Fighter 2. I think that kind of goes without saying. Street Fighter 1 is just so bad, and it's surprising that they gave it another shot, and I'm glad they did, and they did a good job with it, except for Blanca and Dalsum and... Meh.
But. Okay, and then, like... we'll close out on this question.
Okay.
Fireminer clarified this question by saying that MF Ghost was so bad it made people think that, like, we actually, like, I misinterpreted this question, my apologies, but
okay.
Essentially the point of the question was MF Ghost was so bad it made people think that it made people realize they didn't like Initial D that much. Mm-hmm. So, like, a sequel that destroys the spell the original cast on people.
Okay.
That causes people to think less of the original just by feeling like we've now seen a version of this that completely destroys interest in the franchise as a whole. I've definitely seen this happen, but I'm trying to think of an exact example. Like those sequels that kind of obliterate a franchise and, like, have poisonous effects on their predecessors. I don't think this completely killed it, and it's recovered in the intervening years, but I do think that for at least a year, Mass Effect 3 made people think less of those games as a whole.
Yeah, myself included.
No, you're definitely right on that.
Yeah, like, I think over the intervening decades, they've kind of recovered some of their, like, previous stature, but especially for the intervening years, like, people just kind of thought less of the franchise.
I thought 2 made 1 look like dog shit, but then 3 felt like a step backwards to me, and I didn't even finish it as a result. And it actually almost broke my PS3, because I got the PS3 version, and my whole system locked up and crashed one day. Yeah. Oh, it's wild. I played 2 on Xbox 360, then played 3 on PS3 for some reason, and it was like, oh no, this is bad. This is so
bad. Yeah, I can't even imagine what the thought process was behind that.
The thought process might have been I sold my 360 at that point. I'm not sure, though.
That'd do it.
I don't fully remember. Right. It might have been I have to play it on PS3, because I don't have the other console anymore.
Like, this is the only option. Yeah, like Mass Effect feels like one.
I guess we could mention Unlimited Saga here as well.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely nearly put a... Like, that poleaxed the franchise pretty hard and did seem to, like, for a minute there, make it seem like even in Japan there wasn't that much interest in... Like, it seemed to hurt retrospective analysis of the franchise. Because, like, even in America, like, Saga was never huge, but, like, I remember reading reviews that were like, if you can get into this, this is really interesting. And then for at least a few years there, like after Unlimited Saga, it's like, all these are inscrutable nonsense garbage. We've
downloaded the schematics. Remembering those long video series we watched about how to get magic in Unlimited Saga.
How on earth that game works. We've talked about it a few times.
Novel-length FAQ and walkthrough for that game.
We've talked about it before on the podcast, but the secret origin of me and Wheels' friendship is that we were both in the same IRC panel where a few of us had decided to try to get together and see if we could understand Unlimited Saga.
The answer was no, yep. Not really.
No, we were still terrible at it, but we had a lot of fun discussing it. Yeah. We've been friends ever since.
Yeah. It's a weird-ass game. And I hate it and love it in equal measure.
Oh, and I cannot hate it because I have a lifelong friend from it.
Yeah.
I want to say Wheels and I really bonded over the Disgaea series.
True. Are you nerds?
I knew of him because he was good friends with my cousin like back in high school, and I think he was at a few of like the family parties at their house.
Oh, for sure.
And I think I remember telling him when I beat... I don't know if this is true, but I may have told him, dude, I beat Baldur's Gate 2, and he was like, how the hell do you even beat that game? Or something to that effect.
I feel like Baldur's Gate 2 is something Wheels probably would have known.
Like, yeah, I didn't beat it.
I don't know if it's true, but it's believable. Yeah, when I'm like, oh yeah, I beat it, and he's like, you did what? Yeah. Yeah, and then...
I never finished Baldur's Gate 2, but I certainly have spent hundreds of hours playing it.
Yeah. I know everything about that game. But then, no, I think we really bonded over Disgaea 3 more than anything else over the years. Yeah. Oh, and he got his Christmas present already, in case you're wondering.
I'm glad.
Eternal Oceans. Is that even the name?
I had trouble
finding it multiple times because I kept getting fucking up the name.
Are you thinking of Endless Ocean?
Yes.
Yes.
See? You see what I mean?
Endless Ocean. Yes. Well, that's what he asked for, and he got it. And
I got it for my daughter for her birthday. There's some background here, but she didn't want to play it by herself, and I never got around to getting another copy. So I figured instead of asking for something for myself, I should ask for a copy of that.
What a good dad.
So we'll be playing that soon.
That Endless Ocean Luminous.
Yeah. Sounds very chill.
And yeah, there's not a fail state.
Excellent.
That's good. And I was promised the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection for Switch 2, which the physical copy, I believe, is coming out in a couple of days or next week or something.
Amazon claims it will be delivered on Friday. I will believe it when you tell me you have received it.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
Grundy, born on a Monday.
Today's Monday, that's right. Well, now it's Tuesday on the East Coast.
Maybe for you. Yeah, my copy has not yet shipped, but says it's arriving Friday.
Sweet.
It's good because I go on a trip on Saturday. I can play Mortal Kombat Special Forces on a train.
Wow.
Oh, that's right, I keep forgetting like the game is in that collection. Oh, God.
Like an absolute fucking psychopath.
I am excited to play that piece of shit.
You better play some Mythology Sub-Zero. That's got some incredible FMV cutscenes.
Is that RPG-ish enough to play during Q&A Quest? What do you think?
Probably not, but we have shenanigans.
Oh, so no. I will point out that Mythology Sub-Zero levels up and gains new skills from killing enemies.
Oh my god.
That game is wretched, but it is a platformer fighting game RPG.
That is a combination that sounds like it shouldn't and also doesn't work.
Wheels?
Yeah.
How do you think you turn around in Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero?
Just changing directions? Is it there a button to turn around?
No, you press the turn around button.
Lord. Oh, no.
The first time that you fight the second boss, should you reach it, you will not survive its final attack, because how to survive it doesn't make any fucking sense. Guess what? I'm going
to
spoil it for you.
You
the way
around.
That you survive... Oh, no, if only. You do have to turn around. You run to the final boss. Is like this wind god character. Well, the final boss of level 2, which by all accounts is the hardest level. You have to, like, this wind god starts, like, gets pissed off, starts, calling up a storm. You have to turn around, run to the other end of the arena, and hold down to duck, and then in a completely undocumented fashion, because it never works this way before or after this, Sub-Zero will, like, cling to this rock outcropping at the edge of the arena, while the boss is doing its, like, otherwise guaranteed death final attack. This game is fucking stupid nonsense. That's the reason that I want to play the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection, because it features the bad Mortal Kombat games that no one would ever purchase by themselves.
Right. I'm pretty sure you can play the 32X version of Mortal Kombat 2, maybe?
That sounds accurate. You can also play the Game Boy Advance Mortal Kombat Advance, which was a port of Mortal Kombat Trilogy made for the Game Boy Advance in 2 months. It's very bad.
Game Boy Mortal Kombat.
Received Electronic Gaming Monthly's first 0.0.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Which I remember reading in the magazine, where the text with the review simply clarified that this was not in fact a misprint. The game had actually scored a 0.0.
Wow.
Just a truly stunningly bad piece of software. Allegedly a piece of software that Ed Boon was so ashamed of that that's why they kept trying to get Mortal Kombat games onto Nintendo platforms afterwards. Please, they're not all like that. Yeah, like... allegedly, it was because they were ashamed that that product had been allowed to release.
Wow.
That'll be fun. We'll have some good shenanigans with that eventually.
Can't wait to play some Mortal Kombat Trilogy, because that game is janky and awesome.
And I believe it's the PS1 version that is available on there.
Excellent. Some people are upset that it won't have the N64 version. I'm like, why? It's fine. Who cares?
I think it would be more fun if it had both, just because the N64 version is somehow a distinct game and completely insane for different reasons.
Oh, I don't know that.
Okay. I understand why they didn't do it, but like, just because N64 emulation is hard, but it would be funny to have it because, for example, in order to save space, every other version of Trilogy, there's two Sub-Zeros, because there's Maskless Sub-Zero and Masked Sub-Zero, and they have slightly different movesets. Sub-Zero on the N64 version, they just combined their movesets so that they could just have Masked Sub-Zero to save some space on the cartridge.
Oh.
That makes that version of Sub-Zero, like, stupidly strong.
Right.
Because he just has, like, way more moves. There's some other stuff that, like, that completely change, like, that actually changes significant amounts of, like, character balance, because certain moves just have very different properties. It's very strange. So that's why people would like that, but I also totally get why they didn't do that. But yeah. Okay, that we've wandered far afield of what we should be talking about.
Wanted to leave off on that conversation with, I'm very excited to play some Mortal Kombat 4, because I've played like very little of that game.
Oh, that game is dog shit. It's so good.
I'm sure it is. I can't wait.
I, the, is speaking of, like, I wish that we had the stupidest, most fucked up version. It's a little sad that they don't have Mortal Kombat Gold for the Dreamcast. Again, I understand why. But that version has characters who straight up do not function properly. I've brought this up before, but it's so fucking funny. Noob Saibot is in Mortal Kombat Gold, but he's not in MK4. And he has a move that is supposed to, like, fuck up the other player's controls. Unfortunately, it always assumes that he is player one. So if player two connects with it, they fuck themselves up.
Wow. That's great.
Okay. But yeah. Instead of if you have better and smarter ways to use your money, you would purchase these fine books that our dear friend Gaijin can tell you about.
Yes, because it is now the season of Yule Book of Flood, the Yule Book Flood. Yay. One of those traditions that we really should hope spreads worldwide, because we all need more books. Please. Please, please. So if you are interested in tabletop role-playing games, or honestly, who has the time these days? So let's talk about reading about people playing tabletop role-playing games. And we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor for Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. 13 episodes, 5 side stories, and 1 long, self-indulgently long paralogue novel. According to Kindle Unlimited, it's about 2,600-something pages altogether so far. Still working on that. So perfect for just a person who has nothing better to do over Christmas holiday than to sit and read stuff. You know you're out there. Sorry. Otherwise, also, since this is the last Q&A quest of the year, apparently, I might as well mention that at the start of January, we have the author's birthday sale.
Yes.
If it wasn't cheap enough already. Because prices are not competitive. Yes. These prices are not competitive, honestly. I still measure my monthly sales in the number of cafe lattes I can get from the supermarket. So the author's birthday sale is going to be starting, time zones, bleh, let's say from the 8th of January to the 12th or so. With everything on reduced price or even free, just have fun, check it out. We got lots of stuff. And that includes the new novel Vainglorious Longs of the Night, Lit RPG Metroidvania mashup. That shall also be in a part of the sale. Okay. And in particular, please check them out. These are both by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, for purposes of Google Hates My Name, available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Thank you.
You've got plenty of Yule Book Flood time left. Let's see. Joe, where can we find you?
Well, I'm still streaming 2 nights a week on the RP Gamer Twitch channel, which you could be watching right now. And I'm still streaming Pokemon Legends ZA. I noticed I didn't
Wednesday.
Really... What?
An expansion comes out on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, I got to beat the main game first. I'm rank B, and I got to do more story content and a few more rogue mega evolutions. So I've been playing that Tuesday and Thursday nights on the RP Gamer Twitch channel, starting around 9 or 10 p.m., usually going until around midnight. And I noticed I didn't get a lot of viewers or chatters on Thursday, and I'm wondering if maybe people were just watching Metroid streams instead. I don't blame them. But hey, I did my job, you know? And yeah. it turned out fine. And so then, the expansion's coming out. So
Maybe I'll just keep streaming Pokemon then. Maybe after I beat it, I'll just get the expansion and go right into that. I don't see why not, you know?
Pokemon all the way down.
Don't know what else I would stream if I stopped playing Pokemon, then that would be a... That's something... like when I decided I didn't want to do... well, not so much that I didn't want to do Rune Factory anymore, but when Pokemon came out and they sent me a copy, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to move on to something else. But I kept thinking, what's my next game going to be? And it's like, well, you don't have to decide just yet because you can get the DLC. And then I haven't really been streaming much on my own Twitch channel. I haven't really been doing much on YouTube either. I know it's getting close to Christmas, so I am going to have to do my holiday buying guide series. I got to start it now if I want to, you know, get all those videos. And those will be shorter videos where I just talk about a game that came out this year that I liked. And I think it's better if I focus on games that I did like instead of just complaining about the ones I don't like. And so I'm planning on doing some just short videos where I just talk about, I mean, Metroid Prime 4, of course, Donkey Kong Bonanza, Mario Kart World, Sonic Racing Cross Worlds, Marvel Cosmic Invasion. So just compiling a list of games I'd like to cover and maybe just do a quick little 20-30 minute video where I just tell people what I like about it and whether or not, you know, they should consider buying it with their holiday money and gift cards and whatever else they end up getting. So stay tuned to Smoke and Joe Gamer on YouTube to see those videos. And of course you can also chat with us on the RP Gamer Discord server. It's a great community that you can join. And there's
questions.
Yeah. You can you could ask questions. That would be great. Please more ask questions.
Yeah. We're overworking Fireman.
Yeah.
You've got poor 3 weeks to help this poor man who has to deal with us going off topic every three
sometimes
minutes.
Sometimes Fire Miner feels like a poor unpaid intern for the show. I'm so sorry, Fire Miner. Someone else needs to ask questions too.
The secret member of Q&A Quest, Fire Miner. What was I gonna say something about it? But
Have we checked the comments on the episodes or anything? Maybe we've actually missed questions.
I checked one last week.
Okay.
I should have checked this week. That's on me. We'll check them in the new year. You can... Normally, you could find us at 8:30 Pacific, midnight... 11:30 Eastern on Mondays. Wheels will still be streaming over the next few weeks. But we will not be doing podcast records for the rest of the year. I'm going to be out visiting people, and I was overhearing what you guys were doing while I was out, and it sounded like occasionally we need the force of my terrible personality to force this conversation into shape. So, let's see.
It is true. Otherwise, I'm just going to talk about Destiny for like 2 hours and put everyone to sleep and end up talking to myself.
But yeah, in any case, no new podcasts for the rest of the year. We also have our sister show Shenanigans, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Sundays going into Monday.
We'll be doing our award show for that, which I'm going to put up as a bonus episode on the Q&A Quest feed as well. No date or time for that as well at the moment.
It'll probably be in early January, I think.
The second annual Shenanigans? All right.
The Shenan Awards, where we mostly make up categories just to talk about the things we care about, so... Yeah. Beware of that in your feed.
Look forward to the Metroidvania category that won't include Silk Song.
It's just to give an award to fucking Prime 4, which already is going to get plenty of, whatever, doesn't matter. That's the current shape of things. You can ask us questions in the comment section. We will try to do better to keep tabs on those. A special thank you to everyone who has asked us questions over the now terrifying number of years this podcast has been running. I hope everyone has a happy new year, but I think that about wraps it up for us. Happy holidays, happy new year, and see you, Space Cowboys.
See you.
See you.
Hold on. Hold on, wait for it.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you.
Great.
I hadn't even thought about it.
A thousand wrongs ever since Donkey Kong, smithering down every pipe, despite his plum-shaped body type. Who's gonna run in fear while screaming, Mamma Mia? Who leaves me gray and grim? Oh, what does Peach see in him? Mario, with great joy in my heart, each time I watch Mario Kart, you're first and doing so well. But here come the Spanishes. And now you and your Robbie friends are fine at your end. Just let me catch my breath.